Feels like rigor vivis, never mind rigor mortis, you say. I squash the phone against my ear as rowdy school kids in purple jumpers pile on the bus. I'm less stiff after the bath, you tell me, but your dad dropped some clean washing in the bathwater. Those trousers I haven't seen for years. You continue the story till I blurt out, Mum, I'm sorry, I can't take you shopping today. I finally got that interview at the college. I'll come on Friday, we'll go out for lunch and I'll sort the washing. Oh, you say, fine. Then the bus drives under a bridge and you're cut off, the phone left silent in my hand. I push away trampled newspapers with my foot. I'm thinking about Dad bathing you. I'm not sure how you feel when he lifts a tie-dye nightie from your arms, once pink, till he washed it with jeans. Or how you feel when you steady yourself, one hand on the wall, the other on the sink, as you carefully navigate the floor, each leg stiff like stilts. You probably notice the dust in the corner, the grimy towel, the sticky hairs in the sink. You always do. I'm not sure whether, when you are being helped into the tub by your husband, you are self-conscious of your unsteady knees, the way you can't stand upright. When you lean with one hand on the bath, your breasts hanging, the old scars creasing your belly, I'm not sure if you sense him watching. Perhaps you wonder if he recognizes you. I'm imagining this scene, because I'm not there. I'm on this bus, hiding behind a free paper. I imagine you flopping onto the chairlift and Dad easing your legs over the side of the bath. He puts a towel and soap within reach. That's hot, you probably exclaim. The tap turned on, the cold water makes a hollow in the bubbles, and he rushes to tend burning toast or stagnant washing before school. The bathroom already steamy, you press down, and with a whir, the chair lowers into the water. When it was installed, you tested it fully clothed. We all did. We crowded in the bathroom, lifting and lowering ourselves up and down. What a luxury, you said, laughing. I thought you looked like Botticelli's Venus, especially with your blonde hair. The chair lift, a plastic replica shell. But having a bath is not the same. You can't relax in the chair all upright. At least the heat eases the stiffness, submerges and washes away the tight pain. You soap your legs with the flannel and your favourite rose-scented soap, perhaps noticing they need shaving, the hairs long and black and soft. Your legs. Sometimes you pinch them, hard. Perhaps they are not you, not yours. The water around your feet is growing cold, the tap too far to reach. Martin, can you turn the tap off? You call. You can hear him moving around upstairs, a thud and muffled swearing. You wonder what he's broken this time. But he's still here. Other husbands would have left, but not Dad. You told me you were his first girlfriend, his only. He was a Beatles fan in those days. You listened to And I Love Her when his old triumph broke down after a date. You danced to it at your wedding. Later, you bought in the Beatles' Love Songs album as an anniversary present, though you suspected he preferred the more upbeat tunes. Now, Dad sleeps in the spare room because you're up in the night to use the commode beside the bed. He doesn't want to, but you make him sleep there. The numbness, you said, can be worse than the pain. You have invested in jewellery, amber earrings, rose quartz rings, red gold chains. These heavy, glittering stones make you feel feminine again. You wear them like weapons. You're scrubbing your arms with a loofah, perhaps to keep the circulation going, perhaps to keep your skin soft and smooth. You wonder if Dad is making you wait. But no, he's not like that. He tries so hard, but he's just not practical. Though sometimes you suspect he washes whites with blues, because really, he doesn't want to wash any clothes. Marooned and chilled, you call, Martin, the tap! You try to reach it, slip off the seat into the deeper water. It will be a job to get out. Then he's there beside you with a pile of washing in his arms. Perhaps you notice his hair needs brushing. What's left on top is fluffy and sticks up. What did you say? The tap, please. He He leans over, turns the tap off, and a pair of trousers falls into the water. He tries to grab them, but black socks fall in too. Just put them down. Perhaps your voice is loud, harder than you want. You reach for the trousers that are sinking around your feet. They are black and don't have an elasticated waist, too uncomfortable now. You haven't seen them for years. You wore them to the office party, must be 3 years ago. Have they been in the washing basket since then? You remember the restaurant's cheap vinegary wine, the blurry tiredness, then going into the ladies, shaking the puzzling pins and needles in your hands, the muscles in your legs taut and sore. Dad knocked and asked you if you were okay, and you said, "I don't know," as you stared at your hands and then yourself in the mirror. That was just before the diagnosis, before you took sick leave. Already, the manager was complaining about your slowness, the length of your lunch breaks. "We need you to keep up," he'd say. Later, he encouraged your early retirement. I imagine this like a memory. I was not there. I was on a chugging coach in Poland, returned to find you being pumped with steroids in hospital. Your face was bloated and Dad was unable to sit down. He didn't know whether to hold your hand or have it out with a specialist. The bus is drawing to the station. People rush to the front. I could get a bus back to your house. I'd be there in half an hour. I can see Dad pulling the trousers and clothes out of the water, slopping them back onto the other washing. He's not sure what to do with them, these strange objects that in the process of washing are taking over the house, slipping into his thoughts. "Sorry, Susanna," he says. "I'm sorry." His apology irritates you. It's as if he's apologizing for everything. "Put the clothes down," you say. "They're dripping down your trousers." Dad stands there, staring at the clothes in his arms. He doesn't react. He never reacts. This always drives you mad. You can hear yourself, but you can't stop. Why had he agreed to become head of year 7 when he had enough to do? Why doesn't he take more care of what he's doing? He can organize 190 kids, but not the washing. Most of your clothes are ruined. "Calm down, Susanna," he says. He leans over and heaves you back onto the seat. You want to say, "Leave me alone, I'll get out myself," but you don't. You are already rising out of the water, bubbles sticking to your ankles. He holds your legs over the edge. They're limp now, weak and unstable after the bath. He hands you a dry towel and uses one to dab your feet. He gives you a t-shirt and puts your feet into knickers then trousers. He helps you to stand, steadies you and pulls them up. Holding onto the sink and the wall, then the dresser and chair, you make your way into the sitting room, your ankles going over. You're crying by the time you reach the chair. You don't want him to see it. Or perhaps you do. Anyway, you hide your face in your hair. Perhaps he's noticed as he hurries past and the door closes behind him. Your chest shudders and you gulp for breath. Your eyes and forehead are hot and stinging. You cover your eyes with a tissue and lean on your knees. I jump off the bus. The street is heaving with cars and roadworks. I'm still thinking about you, about how, when Dad has gone to work, you can hear the noise in the room's silence, the ticking clock, the passing cars, a dog barking in the street. A cup of Earl Grey cools beside you, and in the hall, beyond the living room door, you see he's left his lunchbox behind. I can hear the words of "And I Love Her" clear in my mind, but I can't quite hum the tune. "I give her all my love, that's all I do. Give us a smile, love," a workman says to me in an oversized yellow jacket. I ignore him and turn to look at the road with its queue of jerking, shunting cars. I'm not sure what sustains you or how you say to yourself, "Today, I will go on," but you do. In front of me, the pavement is being dug up. There is a large crater and the workmen stand around it with cups, peering inside as if something was about to emerge. I stop at the barrier on orange cones, confused for a moment. I'm not sure how to get past or which way I should go. Thank you.